Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining us today for another inspirational conversation. Today, my friends, I have somebody that I've been talking to for literally years, and we're finally having this conversation live on the Visual Storytelling Podcast. His name is Jason Roman, but you might know him under the name Stockeasy. First of all, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm flattered to be here. Is that the song you hear when you're out photographing? Is that the song you hear in your head?
maybe I should use it more. It's you know, gets you into that mood. But I would have to listen to it when I'm in, I don't know, the south of the U.S. or something. It feels like it has that Road
Open
66.
Roads.
Yeah. Jason, it's such an honor that we're finally meeting through video, but that we're having this conversation, because I'll do a little intro. I mean, you've been a portrait and street photographer in New York for several years now. You've documented and explored those ordinary moments that people are often overlooking, and you're kind of reframing them and putting a little twist to it, little note of day-to-day life. And this is, for me, very inspiring. And I will tell you this, every time I look at your feed or any new work that you put up there, I want to grab my camera and just go outside and do the same. So I first of all, I want to thank you. And secondly, I want to know more on how did you get started? Because if I remember correctly, you know, you haven't been a photographer for like 25 years or anything like that. You picked up the camera a little bit later. So how did you find photography, or how did photography found you, actually?
That's interesting. I guess photography kind of found me, actually. No one's ever framed it like that before. But if I go back to the story that I don't usually tell, I realized that I'd been photographing with my brother for a long time, Project Roman Online. We always bought like Android phones, HTC, whatever this, that, because they had better cameras on them. And we'd have like a little photography chat room. We'd send each other pictures back and forth, and like always thinking about composition and framing and what's this weird thing. And maybe up now, when I scroll through my Instagram, before I owned my first actual camera when I was about 28, maybe 30, around that age, I had posted a lot of street photography photos online. I was in Thailand once, and there were some pictures on there that I was like, this is a guard I was taking pictures of with my cell phone. And I'm like, I was doing it before I even realized what it was, you know? But ultimately, the first time I had a camera, I was gifted one by a friend. I was studying acting, and he gifted me his Canon T3i or something for video. And so the idea was to shoot shorts. And I just got fed up waiting for people. I just, you know, I didn't like the idea of like, I'm ready to create, but no one else is. And I had this book sitting at home, which is my favorite street photography book probably ever, just because it feels like home, what I remember growing up in New York to be, which was Bruce Davis's Subway. The subways were always like that. They were dark, you know, they were dirty, they were a little scary, they smelled. And I just think he captured the energy of the subway so accurately. And there's actually a photo in that book that I swear is my mother, and I show it to her all the time. I'm like, you sure? Is this that coffee table was, that book was sitting on my coffee table. And one day I was just kind of like, wow, this camera takes photos. I should go try that. And I went outside and started photographing. And immediately, within the first day, I was outside camping this wall for a couple hours. I got my first photo that looked nothing like the portraits that he took. Even though I was inspired by him, I made some like yellow, color blocky, silhouetted.
Of course.
You know what I mean? I did the stereotypical thing that everybody's doing at the time. And I was still happy. And then some guys came over to me, and he had a sneaker, and he's talking into the sneaker. It's a brand new pair of Jordans, and he's drunk. And I'm just interacting with people in a way that, like, you know, I used to bartend in New York City, so I'm used to social interaction. But like in the streets, just freedom to go up to whoever and talk to them. It was like, it was crack. I needed it. Yeah.
And so, I mean, you did talk about interaction. So was that actually something that came very early in the process? You're like, wow, this tool that I have in my hand is opening up so many doors that I you know, wasn't even thinking about before getting into the photography, the art of photography.
I think that was one side of it, but photography was very difficult for me because, one, I got into it late in the game, and I'm prone to feel like an imposter with anything that I do. It's just the nature of who I am. I studied acting when I was 21, And I couldn't get over the imposter syndrome of like, you're from New York, you didn't do, why are you on stage? Like, you know, all these kids like grew up in theater and you're like, what do you, you know? And so my way of coping with my that imposter syndrome is to kind of like overlearn a little bit. So like I would be incredibly technical. I'd hit all the buttons on the camera. I made sure that I knew what every setting meant. But sometimes being technical like that can be a detriment, you know. You're too technical and then you're not very inspired. You're not doing things that are like impulsive. And so with acting, it was just about like reading what every book that every, you know, prolific acting teacher had ever written, like Meisner and this person, that person. So you kind of dig your heels in and try to like prove to yourself that you belong. But one thing that happened with me in that process of photography was that I started asking myself why a lot. Why am I taking these pictures? What do they mean? Coming across all these photographers who kind of led more with their heart rather than their eyes, that's what resonated with me. And so I wanted to be one of those photographers that wasn't just making pretty photos, even though I did it. I loved pretty photos, but more and more every day I'd take a photo and I'd feel so disconnected to it, and because I didn't see myself in it. So photography ended up being a way for me to explore who I was, and it ended up showing me the things that I felt were beautiful, and I learned a lot about myself just from holding the camera.
That's so true what you're saying, and I can relate 100%. I have this saying that I want my photography to make people feel something, including myself, and that's the why, right? So when you wake up in the morning, knowing all this technical stuff is interesting, but that's not what is the end goal. The end goal is to have another human being reacting to one of your image and or asking themselves or yourself question and reframing their lives. I mean, some images literally changed the world. That's how powerful still photography is still to this date. Yeah, in this ecosystem where there's AI generated images and so on and so forth, there's still a place for the human creative process that leads to making yourself and other people feel something. So, man, this is very, very powerful stuff. But we have to talk about, I mean, you're sporting right now a Manhattan hat, and I have my New York cap on just for this conversation. I thought it was very apropos. But we need to talk about the city of New York, man, because every time I see one of your photos or videos, I'm like, man, this guy is not. I want to say this guy is New York in terms of photography, because you're not only just taking, to your point, pretty pictures of New York or the typical street photography stuff. You're connected with the vibe, you're connected with the people, and it shows, and with the stories more importantly, and it shows, it translates into your photography. So talk to me about how New York has shaped the photographer that you are today.
Well, this is really interesting. This kind of takes me to the Pigeon Project, because I actually avoided trying to fall into the cliches of photographing New York for a good portion of, you know, my time photographing multiple years. I always felt like, oh, everybody's taken this photo already, right? We've all heard that, right? And it's like, well, but you haven't taken it. But that wasn't good enough for me, that kind of thought process. I just kind of felt like I need to make things that are unique to me. And so I didn't take pictures of the sneakers on the wire or the fire hydrant with the water coming out or pigeons even. And one day I was at a Daniel Arnold exhibit, and he had all these incredibly New York moments, like unmistakably New York, you know? And it was like a pigeon in a puddle. It was a trash truck, like a garbage truck in the middle of the night, and I guess it had some CO2 car, and it was like raining, and the lights, it was just a beautiful photo. And I just kept be and it just dawned on me that like I don't have a single great photo of a bird, like not one. And I'm like, that's so absurd. I'm
And you
from the
live there.
city. I know. I'm like, I'm just focused on the people. I wasn't focused on building out the story of New York. And New York is not just the people, it's everything that's happening around it. It's the concrete, it is the sneakers hanging on the wire, you know, it is the pigeons. And so I started to double down on that. And I think through doing that, I started to realize that my identity is so interwoven with the city, and that's how people see me, right? And I think that also kind of spawned this thought process where I realized that I wasn't creating work for other photographers, right? And that can hold you back. And I think a lot of us fall into that trap of being like, well, this photographer that I really like, or this popular person with a following is doing this, so I can't do that too. And it's like, but you're not shooting for that person, right? Like the people that are going to buy your prints and put food on the table for you, they don't own cameras, right? And those are the ones that are going to resonate with your work in an emotional context, not in a, well, what camera did he use? What aperture did he shoot this at? That's not the questions that you want to talk about with your work. Maybe it is. Maybe you're that photographer that just loves the technical side of it. But for me, it was a huge realization that photographers are not my audience. I have a following because photographers like me on YouTube, but the people that actually buy my prints and hire me, they feel an emotional connection to my work and they can't explain it.
Jason, this is so true. I mean, a story that happened to me recently made me think about it. Photo that I took in Brooklyn, and just a girl in a window of a resto, but just the framing and everything. Anyways, I didn't think a lot of it, and I ended up putting it for sale on my site. And I got an email from a person that said, I want to buy this photo. I'm like, holy crap. Okay, this is already something. Somebody wants to buy a photo that has nothing to do with photographers, photography, technicality, or anything like that. Just a human being that like, oh, I like this photo. And then I keep on reading, and the person said, the person in the photo is actually my daughter. And I find this photo very beautiful. And I want to offer it to her grandfather and grandmother so they can put it in the house and look at it because it's such a beautiful photo. And I'm like, holy crap, this is exactly why I do photography, you know, for that specific reason. And it is a good reminder to your point that your audience is not photographer. Phil Penman doesn't care about your photography. I'm sorry. Jason and Fred don't care about photography. We appreciate it, but we don't care about the technicality, the f-stop and the sensor you use and so on and so forth. And so imagine people that are just looking at the photos. They cannot relate to a camera brand or to a camera setting. They connect to emotion. And this is why this is so important, what you just said, Jason. And it's a good reminder for all the photographers. Negativity. Yes.
Yeah. All the negativity is not coming from people that don't photograph.
Exactly. Like
when you get a horrible comment, it's usually a photographer.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, this is funny because I meet so many kind people and generous people like yourself, photographer, but man, the community is full of, I don't know, haters and jealous people. And I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, because every single people that I've had on this podcast, very, very kind, very generous, there to help. I mean, we were talking about our common friend Tyson that you've been on his podcast on. He's building a whole, you know, community over competition, but he needed to create a hashtag to make it official because there is competition out there. And I'm not saying that there's absolutely no competition in the photo industry. I mean, it's tough life out there to earn a living out of photography, but it's just funny that the internet has created so many trolls and so many keyboard warriors, and especially for photography brands. And this leads me to my next question, but you and I shoot a brand of cameras that gets probably the most hate, maybe because of the price, maybe because it seems to be an elitist type of brand. But what's your, well, two questions. How did you discover Leica, not to name it? And what do you think about the actual brand with everything we just discussed?
Well, I discovered Leica when I was buying my first real camera. Well, it wasn't, who knows what my first real camera is, but my first expensive camera was an X-Pro2. I had rented an X100T at the time because I was shooting with a Canon 70D. And I was like, I need something smaller. Like, I want to shoot every single day. But this Canon 70D is like, and the Sigma 18-35 was, I couldn't even go to dinner. I'd have to put it under my chair. It was just an obnoxious size camera. It's unnecessary to have that. And so I realized that I needed the X-Pro2. And so my girlfriend helped me. She put some money down on my camera, and I found a guy on Craigslist, and I got an X-Pro2. And while I was on B&H looking at camera prices, I came across the Leica M10. And I was like, $10,000? What the fuck? Like, I didn't know anything about photography. I was like, why is this camera $10,000? I like could not wrap my mind around it. And fast forward 2 years later, like one of she was in sales and marketing, had reached out to me, and she was like, hey, I would give you some loaners if you want to shoot this brand. I just need you to do me a favor and like photograph my brother's engagement photos in Central Park. He was going to go to like get some cheesy mall photographer to do. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. It was two beautiful black men. I went up to Central Park and they were getting married. I did a bunch of engagement photos and she put me on the loaner list for Leica. And the next thing I know, Kieran Carnani, who's vice president of marketing, was reaching out to me. And I'm used to social media. So I just assumed that some young kid at some desk was like, "Hey, like, yeah, you want a Leica? We'll loan you a Leica." And I was just like, "Whatever, get out. I don't want this." You know, I was like really happy with my X-Pro too. It was like, it was my favorite camera ever made, you know, at the time. And Jason Momoa was staying at the Bowery Hotel and he was shooting a Leica commercial for the CL, and he asked me to come help. And I remember being in the lobby of the hotel, and he got a call. He had to call Kieran because the cameras hadn't showed up yet. And he get on the phone. He's like, "Hey, Kieran." And he gets off, and I'm like, "Wait, was that Kieran Carnani?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "That's your connect at Leica." And it just dawned on me that this is the person that hadn't been reaching out to me. And I'm like, "She's talking to Aquaman?" I'm like, "This is crazy.
Okay, she's
I should
legit.
respond." Yeah, I was like, "I should respond to these messages." And so I realized, I finally Googled her and realized who she was. And I was like, "Wow, this is serious." And so next thing I know, she sent me like an official loaner, and I started shooting the brand, and I fell in love with it, you know? So, the other side of that question, which you're asking about the stigma between these cameras and why people dislike them so much, is one, I'm like, people that think that way, you're not going to change their mind, right? It's totally fine. If they can go to a store and hold the cameras, they would understand the difference between plastic and metal, first off, right? Like actual leather on a camera, handmade, hand painted, these type of things. But one thing I say to people that hate on the brand of Leica, I always tell them, show me another camera company in the world that hangs art, that has a storefront, and has a gallery. And you know, to me, when we talk about art and photography, you can't tell me that any of these brands care about that because they don't hang art. They don't have galleries. So, like, the conversation for me is over right after that point because, you know, Canon, Nikon, whatever. I don't have a big opinion on them, but I'm not going up to people with those cameras and being like, "Bleh, you're going to go shoot kayaks." Like, you know.
This is so true, man. I mean, and I do have the same approach to the shooting experience. Really, to your point, you have to hold one or and to shoot with a rangefinder. And it's not for everybody. Also, that this is the other thing. I mean, some of them are super happy with their Nikon Z8, whatever, and super fast autofocus and all this great stuff. It's a different shooting experience, just like people like different cars or different wines and so on and so forth. So I think we've put that one to bed. People, stop complaining. Just shoot the camera you have. Be happy. Enjoy life and
Be
enjoy the
happy.
gear you have. I think that's
And if
the
you can,
moral.
go rent one. Go rent a
Yeah.
Leica from the store. Let them and try it out. There's a connection to what you're doing that I think a lot of photographers value. When I use an M camera or pretty much any Leica, to be completely honest, I feel directly responsible for what comes out of that camera. When I shoot anything else, especially Sony, I hate to say it, but I feel very removed from the experience of creating the image.
You don't
I
like it
don't
when the
feel like
AI makes the decision for you, Jason?
it's too much. It's just too much. And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, I just think that we complain about cameras so much, but if I had to ask you to show me 10 images, they're all going to be created on lesser phones than your iPhone, lesser im like cameras than your iPhone. So it's like, it's the same thing with movies. Most of the films that we're like obsessed with, they're all shot on film. And, you know, we have better cameras today. You could buy a digital camera for $2,000, but people are like, "Oh, I need autofocus and I need this." It's like they didn't have those luxuries.
They were making it with what they had, and so it's a
Exactly.
great reminder of the content and the story is way more important than the actual gear. And to our own points, I mean, this is for the past 5 years. There's no bad cameras out there. I mean, you can buy any Fuji, Sony, whatever. They're all great. Then it becomes a shooting experience. So I really like that aspect of it. And speaking of Leica, you did a recent project. I want to talk less. Oh, and by the way, we say hi to Kieran that now is at
Okay.
Hobolite, and she does great stuff there too. And this is another aspect, the lightning that I'm less familiar with, but man, this what they do at Obolite is so it's the same approach to design and experience that they have at Leica. So hi Kieran, and we'll be in touch soon.
Yeah, very beautiful lights there.
So going back to that pigeon project, so you did shoot it with the Leica SL3, but again, it's not about the camera, it's more about the story. So I want you to walk me through, how do you go outside of your comfort zone? You did mention that this is not what you usually shoot, but for people who are listening to this podcast that are trying to find their voice, their contribution to photography, how do you go about shooting something that you're completely new to? How do you prepare your mindset?
That's interesting. I want to say before I get into that, I want to say one last thing because I was thinking about this and the emotional context of photographing with X-Pro 2, right? When I started with that camera, the reason why my photography skyrocketed was because I loved the feel of that camera. There was an emotional resonance with that camera. And it's the same. It's like, to me, buying a camera that you're going to shoot every day is like buying a motorcycle, right?
There you go.
If somebody loves a cafe racer, you're not going to talk them into the technical like prowess of an adventure bike. It's just not going to happen. It's an emotional purchase. So I just want to
100%.
also like trying to argue against what people are connected to, like clothing wise, or like what makes them feel sexy. That's what my cameras do. They make me want to go shoot. So yeah.
Precisely.
Anyway, it's like buying a motorcycle to me. So to me, the argument is kind of null.
But Jason, you will admit though that there's a lot of us, you and myself, went to the same path that goes from Fuji to Leica. But that's another podcast. Well, maybe we'll do another one.
No, yeah.
It's the
Yeah,
upgrade path, but I don't want to get
absolutely.
too into the gear talk.
It's steps. There's
It's
steps.
steps. It's steps. But honestly, Fuji does a great job at you know, being more affordable and offering a similar and not a rangefinder type, but a rangefinder type experience with the
Yeah,
Expo.
but
So,
they're still expensive. That's
yes.
the other stigma that's kind of strange to me. My X-Pro 2 broke the bank. The $2,000 camera, you can get so much underneath that price too, right?
I
So
agree.
that's not something to just dismiss. It's a hefty camera. They're a luxury item as well.
I agree. I agree. So, going back to the mindset of going out of your comfort zone. First of all, how was it for you, and what would you recommend for people listening to this podcast that want to breach out and still be on brand or on voice, but do something completely different?
I think, the pigeons were kind of like a really interesting aha moment for me. And then it got very scary very quickly because that project came with the timeline with the SL3. And so Kieran at the time was still with Leica and she called me. And I also was hitting her up because I'm like, they asked me to be an ambassador for the Q3 and it just never felt right. I was in New Zealand. I shot a whole launch video for the Q3, and then I was just like, it's not good. I don't like it. It doesn't feel like me. It doesn't feel New York. If I'm going to be in my first Leica video, I can't do it in New Zealand. You know what I mean? So we scrapped that, and I was like, I know the SL3 is coming. I need to do that video. That has to be my launch video because the SL2 is what made my career. I shoot a ton of professional work with the SL2. So she hit me up. I knew I had 2 months to make something. And while I was on the phone with her, the pigeons were in the back of my mind. I was actually staring at a pigeon from the taxi when she had called me and said, okay, I'm going to get an SL3. Can you come to Jersey? Da, 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 da. I was like, yeah, absolutely. And she was like, but this time they actually want to know what the project is. They want you to pitch it to them. And I'm like, oh, Leica's never asked me to do that before. But I was like, okay, I want to shoot pigeons.
They're
And she
like,
was like,
okay.
actually, Kieran immediately got it. And she got very emotional because she told me a story about her father. And I talk about this in the launch video where she says that her father would go to work early and he would feed the pigeons and he said, we have to take care of our natives. And he would do it every day and he had an affinity for pigeons and he passed away and every day he would go and feed these pigeons. So it just resonated with her and she understood it immediately. So I put the pitch deck together and I sent it and Leica Germany had to approve it and USA had to approve it and they loved it and they said, okay. And I was like, oh, I never thought they were going to say that. And I was scared. I was like, maybe I'll just go and shoot street portraits. Like, let me just do something easy. And once they said yes, I had to start shooting the pigeons and I didn't have a lot of time. And so I would be outside every day and I started off with like, 50 millimeter lens, thinking that that would be good enough and close enough. And it wasn't. And the pigeons were like this big and they wouldn't get close to me. And I'm trying to feed them. And so then it went to the 24 to 90 and the 24 to 90 didn't work because it was still just not enough. If I needed more separation because what I started to realize was that the pigeons were too chaotic. And when there's too much chaos in the frame, some of it looked good, but some of them were just like, it wasn't art. And then some of the photos were just pictures of a bird. You just look at it and you're like, that's just a
It's like
bird.
bird photography in New York.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like a bird on a branch. So I'm actually at Adorama with my girlfriend at the time, and we're looking at this photograph that they had hanging there. And I was like, that's my images. It's like a butterfly on a branch. And I'm like, there's no art. It's just a document of an animal or an insect, And so I'm like, how do I bring the art to this? And I actually stumbled upon the style because I brought the 90 to 280 out one day and I shot it as shallow as I could, backlit. And I got this one photo of the bird and it looked like a painting. It's the moon one, that moon looking photo with the wing coming out. And I realized what it was that I was after. And from that moment forward, that created the style. And so since then, of course, I've gone out with the M11 monochrome. I posted some of my stories recently, which was crazy shooting 35 I tried an F-16, and I would just like throw my girlfriend's over my shoulder, throwing bread down on the floor, and I'm like 3 feet away from the birds, kind of trying to. And then I would crop in because it's 60 megapixel, and that monochrome is so sharp, so you can have some room to crop. And then I shot it at 1.4, and those look crazy. And you realize it's all about the experimentation, because this F-16 photos made the birds look very real, and everybody said they look like mob bosses. And
Yeah.
then the 1.4, they kind of look like stuffed animals, right? It's almost like you're freezing time. And so they look like inanimate objects, almost like they've been what is it when they stuff the animals? I forget what it's called, taxidermy.
Yeah, taxidermy.
And so that was those are just creative choices. You know, sometimes you don't know what it is, and you just have to go and experiment, and you have an aha moment where you're like, this is the style that I'm going to pursue. And it can be very scary because the timeline was coming up. You know, I would also say don't experiment with something this crazy when you have the deliverable attached to it. But I am often running towards fear and doing things that challenge me. So.
Which is, I guess, the kind of the key insights here. So fear, and I would say not fear, but limitations in terms of time, in terms of delivery, and so on and so forth, can be a driver. You know, you have to deliver something, you have to experiment, you have to fail fast, fail forward, and really learn from every single shot you take. I'm sure, you know, the one with the, we'll call it the moon pigeon shot, wasn't the first one you took, right? So that must be
No, there was
the thousand
twenty
one you,
thousand
well, there
images.
you
I mean, I'm saying it was a lot of bird photos. Like, I have a
the
4 terabyte hard drive filled with pigeons right now. So.
Lightroom AI will be like, we'll start like serving you, I don't know, photography, like bird photography recommendations,
Could you imagine?
Shutterstock.
Well, I to me though, also I'll say this, the other side of the project, not the technical side of the project. I've always loved photographers that had very simple projects, but the execution is everything. Like Ralph Gibson's Quadrants, to me that is such a brilliant 50 millimeter lens, f/8 at the closest focusing distance. Very simple. And he's like, you know, I don't know when my next photo will be, but I know where to look. And to me, that was so brilliant. And there's photographers who have just photographed clocks. They come up with these incredibly simple ideas, and then it's all about the execution of the idea. And for me, I wanted something, I needed something that felt so New York. Because, yeah, that's where I'm from. So I'm thinking about it from that perspective, and I wanted it to feel iconic. And so that's kind of what I was tinkering around with in my head when I was like, yeah, I need this project to feel this way. So I really wanted to deliver on a level that I think would resonate with people, because I think we often have a passive existence, especially people without cameras, right? And the messages, the overwhelming positivity that I'm getting back about the Pigeon Project is that people are sending me photos of pigeons constantly, randomly, which is fantastic. I love it. And then they're also talking about how like they never really paid attention to birds, and I didn't either. The pigeons feel like these weird robots. You know, there's the whole movement, pigeons aren't real and all that stuff, and like you just ignore them. And now I'm so deeply rooted in like their little existence that I see relationships forming out. I see when they're fighting, you know, I understand when one of them's being skittish. I'm like, oh, this one's bold. Like, and it's really nice to add something to your existence. So to me, this project is the epitome of photography. It's a passive thing that you now pay attention to. And all of a sudden, your life is richer because of it. You've added so much context and interest into your life. I walk around and I'm looking at pigeons every day, and it makes me smile.
This is so true, and I will never see New York the same way. I can't wait to get back and now look at the life of the pigeons in New York. But would you say that this project actually opened up your mind on series? Because I'm looking at your feed, and I don't know if you are really more inclined into having series or just shooting, you know, one images at a time. I know when you work with like Jason Momoa, you're gonna have a series of photo out of that. But are you more inclined to produce like zines and books moving forward after a project like that?
You know, I've never felt that I was at the level that I should be at to put work out, if I'm being completely honest. Like, Instagram is like a document, it's a journal for me. Sharing work, like some type of narrative piece that is together in a book, I have ideas, but I've never felt like, I mean, when I say I have thousands and thousands of images that are just on hard drives, and I don't share enough work. That's my biggest issue. But I feel like this might be the first piece that I put out that I make a book on because I do feel very strongly about it. And sometimes mistakenly, there's something that happens in the photographer's career and that ends up identifying them and following them forever, right? And you don't even realize it, right? This guy, Jeff Staple, wrote me. I don't know if you know who Jeff Staple is, but he did the Pigeon Dunks. Those are like $100,000 pair of dunks. And he probably liked pigeons before that, you know what I mean? And then he put one on a dunk. And it became one of the most famous pairs of sneakers ever made. And now he's the pigeon guy as well, right? And so sometimes artists stumble on these occurrences, like Basquiat, like who knows, you know, Jackson Pollock or whatever. Sometimes you do something and you don't realize how impactful it can be. And then that's kind of your story now.
I completely agree. And for a couple things. So Jason, first off, if you think that you're not, you know, if you have imposter syndrome still today, I will say this, please stop because you're probably one of the most inspirational photographer that I know of recent times. And I put you way up there, you know, with the Phil Pemmons and the Matt Stewarts and all these guys. And I'm not saying this lightly. I truly believe it. And you are an
Thank you. I
inspiration. And
appreciate that.
I can feel it. And I can see it. And when I talk to other people, I think the next step for you, and we will all buy your book and go to your gallery. That's 100% sure because you've inspired so many people across the world to pick up a camera and just, you know, tell their own stories. So please do. And secondly, about this, you know, being recognized for one photo or one series or one type of images, it's so true. And I was playing music for the most part of my life, and it's also true in music, right? So sometimes you write a song, you don't think necessarily, you know, much of it, and then it gets on the air, and then everybody loves it. I mean, when Green Day put up Basket Case, I mean, I don't know, it was just another punk song, but that's the song that defined the history. And they had other great songs, and when Nirvana did the Smells Like Teen Spirit one, I think, you know, Kurt Cobain himself didn't want to put it on the album first, but then bam, that was the a whole new movement in music history that just got started with this song. So I make a lot of parallels between different art forms, and there seems to be a theme where it's not necessarily what you think is going to define your career that actually does in the end. And that's beautiful. That's art. Art is about hope. Art is about experimentation. And that's another testament of it. So I'm glad that it's happening to you right now, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for the kind words. I think we're kind of solidifying what I was saying earlier, too, because you think across all mediums, music, painting, and all that stuff. It's like, it's for some weird reason. And actually, it's not that weird of a reason. I think it's social media. I think how accessible photography is today, YouTube, everybody's reviewing gear, and we're talking about gear obsessively and technical ability. You have people that don't even really know how to take photographs are online teaching people how to take photographs.
Take my workshop.
It's absolutely insane. It's like, wait, what happened to like the master class? It's like, oh, let's do the like amateur class. But like, I think when you think about other mediums, like you just said, all the people that consume Teen Spirit, they don't play music, right?
Exactly.
Like all the people going to the movie theaters, they don't direct. They are not cinematographers. They're not editors. They're not colorists. They're not any of those things. And so I think it's so important to just remember as photographers, don't beat yourself up. Just understand that your audience are people that don't own cameras. That's who you want to make images for, you know? And so I think tying that back in together makes a lot of sense because when you were talking about Kurt Cobain, I was like, yeah, could you imagine like other musicians being like, oh, that song sucks, Kurt, don't put it out. Like, yeah.
It's just four chords, dude. This is so simple.
Exactly. And then it has boom, it's like one of the biggest songs ever made.
And you played that on a cheap Fender Jaguar? No, no, no.
That's the photographer literally being like, oh, you cropped your pigeon. You cropped it on the pigeon. So you're losing resolution. That's what
Oh
people want
my
to talk
God.
about. I'm like, what you're, if that's the conversation we're having, it's typically not somebody I want to talk to anyway.
100%. Man, speaking of masters of photography, we need to talk about your inspirations because I want to know like what type of inspiration do you get? It doesn't have to be other photographers, but to keep and you know, to keep being inspired, you shoot often, you shoot every day and you shoot professionally and personally, but when you want to disconnect from your work and get an influx of inspiration, what do you do or what do you look at?
I get inspiration from everything. I watch a lot of horror films. And so there's projects in the back of my mind brewing about trying to make a horror street photography book in New York City.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Just like through the vibes and everything that's happening late in the evening, or early morning in New York City. But I love a lot of photographers. I've been really blessed to have an incredible connection with like just some of the best photographers out there that inspire me. I hang out with Todd Heido often. I was with Bruce Gilden yesterday. Ralph Gibson is a close friend. Like, it's just, I don't know how I got so blessed, but I get a lot of
Man.
inspiration from people like that. And they're very giving people. I can ask them questions about absolutely anything under the sun, and they're there for it. Even like Bruce, I'll casually be on the phone with him, and he'll just drop some incredibly profound knowledge. I remember one time I was on a call with him, and I was like, yeah, I have to go photograph this thing. And he's asking me what the project, he always wants to know what the project is. He's not one of those guys. There are certain photographers that you talk to, and they don't really, they couldn't care less about what you're doing. They're so far above you. You know what I mean? And every time I talk to Bruce, if I say I'm shooting something, he goes, well, what is it? I try to glaze past it because I'm like, I'm not going to bore Bruce Gilden with my photographic career. And he goes, what is it? What are you shooting? What are you going to shoot it with? Who's there? And then he
Wow.
wants to know everything. And so I'm like, yeah, I got to shoot this thing. And it's like not a very inspiring place. And he literally just like kind of in a whisper and dismissive, just very quickly goes, inspiration doesn't come from without, it comes from within. And then he keeps
Wow.
going.
He
He
just
just drops that. I'm like,
he mic drops you like everything.
just a quick reminder. He because he's just a master. And he's just like, you have to remember that, like, it doesn't matter where you are, it comes from within you. And that's something I think about all the time. And because he said it so casually, I'm like, yeah, what am I talking about? I'm sitting here. Everybody knows that there's a moment where you're sitting and you're bored and you pick up your camera and it could be a stack of paper sitting there and you start taking pictures. And the first 30 seconds are just kind of like, nah, what am I doing? And then 45 minutes later, you're like, oh my God, this is the best way. You're so,
Absolutely.
so that inspiration is always there. It's within you. And I think sometimes, if I feel that being depleted, I'll go and I'll reference these books. I'll go look at Cortez or I'll look at Kudelka, and usually with books, I think it's more important to have a bunch of books at my photo studio, and I'll print out 4x5s that I find online, and I'll pin them to the wall so that they bleed into my subconsciousness at my studio. And so I'm looking at them every day because we need references in life, right? When you feel blank and you don't know what to shoot, it's because you've run out of a frame of reference, If you were to go write a movie tomorrow or direct, even though you've never directed it, you're going to reference all the things you've ever seen. So it's important to consume a really healthy diet of photography so that, like, when you don't know what to do, there's something that's going to pop in. That's the thought. That's the inspiration. That's like, try this. And then who knows where that can go,
Yeah, I'm happy you mentioned that it comes from within, because a lot of photographers are stuck in that stigma of, oh, but I cannot shoot my hometown. I don't get inspired. I don't feel inspired in my hometown. But man, it's not about the city, the name of the city. It's about the stories that are unfolding every single day. And I don't care if you're in a rural place or an urban place, there are stories unfolding every single day that are worth capturing. And sometimes it's something very personal that you can relate to, and sometimes it's something very impressive that you're overwhelmed with. At the end of the day, it's that process that you need to practice. I think Phil Penman had also a very good point, and I'm happy to call Phil. I don't have all the connections that you have, but Phil is my
I
go-to
love
when I have
Phil. Yeah,
questions.
Phil's the
And
homie.
I'm like, Phil, how did you get that iconic shot of all the red lights in New York? With the one with the taxi, and it's in and it's very moody, and it's one of my favorite images actually of his. And you said, dude, I just shot 25,000 images to get there. I go out and shoot every day. So yes, it's within you, but you cannot shoot photos if you're sitting at your desk thinking about the gear and what lens should you buy next and so on. You just got to go out and shoot. So he said, my advice to you is, let's stop this conversation and just go out and shoot, man. You'll at one point you'll find your voice, your style, and you'll get to a point where you're like, yeah, this is what makes me go click.
And that's on something that you just said too that I thought was fascinating, because I think the theme, what we keep referencing, is the fact that, like, what holds photographers back is the assumption that people are not interested in their surroundings because they're thinking that their images might not ever reach outside of their surroundings, right? So you have to think about the fact that if I mean, look at Matt Day is a great example of this, Chillicothe, right? You have to understand that you're not shooting for the community of Chillicothe, right? You're shooting for everybody that's never been there. So if you think about the work that way, the fact that I'm avoiding stereotypes in New York, not everybody that's buying my print lives in New York. But the majority of people that are on my Instagram are all over the world. So I need to, it's my job to depict this city the best that I can so that these people feel inspired to either visit here or buy a print, or I'm trying to give them the energy of this place, right? So wherever you are in the world, shoot for the people that are not there. You know, you're trying to tell the story of what's immediately around you. Why is your place so unique? Or why is it not unique? What's the mundane elements that are happening every year, every day that you'd love to escape? Document those things because that's fascinating to someone like me who's from New York and I can't escape people. What does true peace and silence look like in the middle of nowhere? I don't know. So show me. Like that's the beauty of photography.
You're making such a
But
good point. And Matt was on the podcast also explaining that he felt like that, like we just referenced, like, oh, nobody will care about a rural place like where I live. But then he said, okay, but let me put a personal angle to it, and let me talk about, let me try to use my own experiences and my failures and successes and put it in the photography that comes out of it. And it's very different from somebody who is seeing positively or seeing with like colors and so on and so forth. He decided to go for most of the shots black and white with that HP5 with his Leica M6 and so on and so forth. So he took an angle that was aligned with his own values and how he feels about life. So you cannot go wrong. You can never go wrong with that approach. Again, anywhere you are in the world. So we say hi to Matt. We keep dropping
Matt.
names that you guys should follow all of these guys, Kieran, Matt,
Absolutely.
Andy Ekla, Phil Penman. All these guys are just great and are great sources of inspiration. But Jason, I want to hear you on, this is not an easy question, but what makes you go click, and on the street? What makes you press that shutter and like, you know what? This one's for me. Click. It's a tough one.
Interesting. It really is. It's a tough one because it's I don't click that often, if I'm being completely honest. I have to remind myself that you almost also have to lubricate the wheels a little bit when you go outside. There was a thing that I used to do when I first started out where I felt like very like rigid in the street, and I would just be like, take 500 photos, just shoot. Shoot the garbage can, shoot this, shoot that, just walk around. And it's almost like you start to feel, because there's a self-awareness that kind of can take hold of you. And so I just start shooting everything, right? And then, yeah, I call it like your spider sense, that little tingling that's like, oh, this thing is fascinating. I walk around waiting for that. And then whatever it is, I told myself, I made a promise that if you feel that, you have to photograph it. You have to photograph it because there's something there. It's telling you that that's something. So I go back and I honor that moment. But nowadays, when I'm walking around, I'll look and I constantly look for people's eyes. People ask me, like, how do I get a photograph that feels like so strong, like the way that someone is looking? And it's usually not through coaching people. You can't really train someone to be an actor to give you something, if they haven't even been there yet, right? And what do you say to somebody? Like, maybe there's somebody that can do that. But for me, when I started reading Bruce Davison's Subway, he did a beautiful thing because I think we all photograph very similarly. And he would say that he would always try to steal the moment. And if he couldn't, he would approach the person and explain to them why he wanted the photograph, right? And what he would say is, once they would say yes, he'd be like, okay, when I was watching you, it was a very beautiful moment. It was very cinematic. I asked you whatever it was that you were just thinking about 30 seconds ago. Would you mind going back there and just having that thought again? And even saying that to somebody, saying, would you mind going back to what you were just thinking about? They do this. Well, what was I thinking about? That's infinitely more interesting than just, okay, look into the, right? It's like their mind starts to go somewhere. And so once they start to get in that, I'll say, okay, give me your eyes. And then they just look at me and whatever it was that's percolating up there, I've just captured that moment. So that's the technique that I use a lot. And it really helps with me when I'm walking out through the streets because I'm looking for people that have that. I'm not trying to guide people to it. You either have it or you don't. It's like casting for a movie, right? So whoever you photograph, it's I forget who said this, but every portrait is a self-portrait, right? So
That's so
I'm
powerful.
very, very specific about who I photograph because every single person that I'm taking a picture of, I think says something about me.
That is so true and so powerful. Jason, what would you say to somebody who hasn't picked up a camera yet but is interested in it? I would put them in the category of the dreamers, right? They're in their room. They're like, I love what Stockies is doing. I love what Matt Day is doing, but I'm shy. I don't know if I can do it. Like, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them that photography is the greatest hobby in the world, right? And
Yes.
if you are shy and you're looking to get out of your shell, A camera is one of the greatest conversation starters in the world too. No matter where you go, people are going to talk to you about your camera. So get out, shoot things that don't intimidate you. Go for easy subjects, photograph old people and street performers. You know what I mean? Like, cut your teeth on just getting out and like interacting with the world. And that alone is going to be so rewarding. You don't have to aspire to be a Bresson or something like that, but just getting out and interacting with the world around you and seeing. Once you start seeing, you are changed forever. You know, there's never going to be a beam of light that you won't stare at longingly. Like, so I think having that little switch in your head changes your life in such an incredibly rewarding way. For me, I'm always thinking about how lucky I am to have turned that switch on, because even though it's obsessive, you know, like, yeah, I can't sit on my computer and get things done because I'm like, oh, what are the pigeons doing? What's this light doing right now? Right now, I need to get outside and go shoot. But it is a very rewarding experience because it means that you're no longer living passively. You're no longer just walking by these beautiful moments every single day. You're actually interacting with them. So get a camera because it's a fabulous like hobby, and it'll push you further in life, and you'll have more conversations, and you'll feel more connected to your existence. So.
Man, this is deep stuff. I would add that I would add this. I think it's Gerald Moritz who said you have a license to see, and this is summing up what you just said. There's no permission to be asked or anything like that. This is your license to see and notice and connect with things in a very different way than just going about your day to work and so on and so forth. So very powerful hobby, like you just mentioned. Jason, what's next? What you can talk about or cannot talk about, but what's on the horizon? I mean, you just completed that Leica launch, and it's beautiful. And I'll put the links in the description so people can actually see it if you haven't seen it yet. But what's next for you?
Oh man, so much, dude. I've been on the road, dude. I leave on May 2nd. We're shooting On the Roam season 2 with Jason Momoa. So I do all of his key art now and principal photography for TV shows and movies. I just shot the Minecraft movie posters.
Ooh.
So when that comes out, that'll be everywhere. And those are all my images of Jack Black, Jason Momoa, and Daniel Brooks. We've got another TV show, Achieve of War, on Apple, where I'm going to be working on a little book with Jason. We do a lot of street, like set photography that feels very street and portraits. Yeah, those are the three projects that I'm working on now. It's really hard to be in this world where you shoot something and you can't put it out for 2 years, but
That's the commercial side of it, my friend, and
that is the commercial side of it, indeed.
And but would you say that your street photography is literally what, you know, was feeding that approach to commercial photography, and why now people are hiring you and paying you to bring that vision, to bring that feel, that look and the feel into the commercial work?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it that I used to be afraid of. I felt that possibly because my images didn't have a cohesive style. I shot a lot of things when I started off. I used to always think that that was a negative. I thought it would hold me back. I was obsessed with what's my style? How do I find this style? And I still would love to have a defining. And I think people now see my images and they know that that's my image, just from my color grading, maybe the context of the image. But having shot everything, you know what I mean? Like, I shoot motorcycles, I shoot pigeons, I shoot moths, I shoot portraits of the studio. You know what I mean? I try to shoot everything. I think that being a well-rounded photographer, because the people that inspired me also did that kind of stuff, right? Like, if you look at like an Irving Penn, he didn't just take portraits. You know what I mean? He did still life. Cortez, like all these guys dabbled across the medium because it's so important to experiment with light, with objects. And so I've done that. And I think it's paid off all these years in where there's really nothing that I can't shoot. So when somebody asks me, can you do this? Can you do that? Is this possible? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I've done that. You know, so I think it just ended up working in my favor. And as a photographer, working photographer out here, I think you have to be a bit more well-rounded than just a master photographer. Sadly, you're competing with a lot of people that have followings. Some of them really know how to talk about photography, but they're not great photographers. Some of them are excellent photographers, but they don't know how to talk about photography. So I think it's very important to be able to discuss what it is that you're trying to execute, and your work because people are going to ask you. And when you don't know how to describe your own images, that's a problem. You know what I mean? When you can't explain what it is that you want in a working environment with multiple people, that can be an issue too. So I just say, you know, if you're really serious about being a working photographer, then you should be doing the things that are going to help put you in that space and, you know, applying yourself in a way that you can help you navigate that space. Because there are people that I come across that like, they're not interested in Capture One. They've never worked in a studio. But I'm like, how are you going to get those jobs if you don't do that? If you don't practice it, nobody's going to make you do it. You got to do it yourself. So,
That versatility, and of course we have to mention it, but video is central now, right? So I don't know for you, but I think you cannot just be a photographer unless you're very well established and well known. You have to add that video aspect to it too.
Well, I like Leica, and Leica's very expensive, and I would never say no to a paycheck. So if somebody tells me that they want to pay me to shoot video, I think there's so many photographers in my life that I've tried to convince to get into video. And I love video as much as I love it. Like I have my Red Komodo X and have a set of Leica R lenses, right? Like that is like, I love shooting on that camera just as much as I love shooting on my Leica. You know what I mean? Like it's always, and so there is an element of it of creativity. It's expression. So to me, I can't fathom being someone that is in this creative space that doesn't want to dabble across the boards, you know? And also if it can make you money. So I'll if somebody said, hey, you want to learn how to paint tomorrow, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely, let's go paint. And I would figure out how to do that in a way that represented me and all the things that I'm doing already, you know? So I just think that we should people in general, like I want to just keep adding things to my plate in life. I don't want to be somebody that's just like, I'm just doing this one thing. I love photography. It's always going to define me and be who I am. It's going to be the cornerstone of everything that I do and the inspiration for everything that I do. You know, I've shot three short films now, and all of those short films are my best impression of what a movie looks like. But I'm realizing now that the proper way for me to shoot a movie is to shoot it from my perspective, right? So photographs are still, they don't move. So maybe I should put sticks down. So the next thing that I do, I'm going to start shooting and composing it like photographs, like a Roy Anderson or something like that, because that's more true to what I do. Like, why am I doing all the Steadicam stuff and move, you know? So it's like, it's thinking about how you do things. And that's the fun, the approach, because you're learning about yourself. So I would challenge people to constantly add things because they influence and inspire each other, right? Shooting studio light helps you understand street light better and vice versa. So
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would ask you this: so, in a world where you're super versatile and you publish your work, and this we're nearing the end of the podcast, so I really want to ask you a question: when are you back on YouTube? No, that's just, I'm just kidding, but more social media as a whole, social media as a whole, right? Because it's there's 24 hours in a day. Everybody has the same amount of time, and you have to manage. Shooting professionally, personally, doing video shoots, photo shoots, and then they're asking you to do social media and be a YouTuber and be an Instagram contributor and so on. So what's how do you manage, man?
I don't know. I think I can't. It's impossible. It's actually sad because I do enjoy YouTube, and I have 20 videos that I've probably recorded that are just sitting there. Because I kept telling myself,
What?
oh, I'm going to make a video. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I just have never edited them. I have a video that I recorded where I'm hanging out with Bruce Gilden all day long. We go to Griffin. He's making prints and we're talking about the prints. And then he comes back to my studio and I take portraits of him in the studio. And like, he's like, let me see it. And I like show him the
You need
portrait.
to
He's like,
publish
I
that,
think you could
Jason.
do
You need to
better.
publish that. Is that the one where we see Bruce in front of the roses? Was that from
Yeah,
that shoot?
that was taken at my
Dude,
phone.
you
No,
need to
it's a
publish
different
that.
one. It's at the end of the SL3 launch video.
Okay.
There's a photo of Bruce Gilden pops up in that. And he
Nice.
came to my studio and I photographed him for a bit in the studio. And so I made a YouTube video out of that. I made a YouTube video with the pigeons. I made a YouTube video when I got my brother his M11. We surprised him with the M11. He sold all his, and it just never came. I just
Dude,
don't.
send me the footage. I'll upload it for you for the benefit of the community.
That's what Gadget does. Gadget's like, I'll edit these for you. I'm like, I know, I know, I know, I know. But I'm taking a month-long trip coming up right now. And so maybe on the plane, I'll chop some stuff up and start throwing it online because I'm going to have a lot of plane time. So,
Nice. And where are you off for that? Are you allowed to say where you're going?
yeah, we're going to Osaka, then we're going to Tokyo, then Germany to the Leica headquarters, and then we go to Paris, then we go to London, then Poland, and then Nashville. So,
Well, my friend,
Nice little trip.
yes, and we are looking forward to seeing those images coming out of those trips or those videos even, as we know you shoot video now.
All of it, all of it. It's a lot, so.
So, Jason, first off, I want to thank you so much. Like I said in my intro, you're probably one of the most generous guy in the biz and in the community, and you are always saying yes, ready to help. You're raising your hand, and also you're an inspirational figure into our community. So I want to thank you personally for contributing today. Maybe one last word from you before we end the show.
Ask yourself why. Every photograph you take, say why.
Love it, love it. So if you enjoyed this podcast and you're asking yourself, why am I not giving it 5-star already? You can do that on the Apple Podcast system and also Spotify and everywhere you listen to your podcast. And do share it. Do share it with one of your friends, because I'm sure one photographer or just somebody who's interested in art in general and visual storytelling will enjoy conversations like this one. I've been Fred Ranger. Please be happy, enjoy life, and enjoy your visual storytelling.